That's what the professor said, and then we'll let him pick up from there.
It's quite extraordinary to hear a supposedly learned person call the United States a leading terrorist nation, one of the leading terrorist nations in the world. It's false, and it's very treacherous teaching. In the situation Mr. Chomsky's talking about, of course, the United States supported the Contras in Nicaragua. The condemnation or judgment by the World Court was not that it was terrorism, but that we supported some unlawful activity. However, when there were free elections in Nicaragua and Mrs. Chamorro took office, all the lawsuits, all the complaints against the United States were dropped when you had a democratically elected country. We have done more good for more people than any country in the history of the world. What I want to know of Mr. Chomsky is if he believes we are a leading terrorist state. He is obviously welcome in the United States. Why do you choose to live, sir, in a terrorist nation?
First of all, the World Court condemned the United States for what it called the unlawful use of force and violation of treaties.
Which is not terrorism.
That's international terrorism.
No, it is not.
Yes, it's exactly international
terrorism.
Furthermore, the escalation to attack undefended civilian targets is just a classic illustration of terrorism. And furthermore, it continues right to the present, as I was saying. So, for example, may I continue?
Sure.
In the late 1990s, some of the worst terrorist atrocities in the world were what the Turkish government itself called state terror, namely massive atrocities, 80% of the arms coming from the United States, millions of refugees, tens of thousands of people killed, hideous repression. That's international terror, and we can go on and on.
Before we go any further, let's give Bill a chance to respond to the Turkish strain of this. Go ahead, Bill.
America responsible for hideous repression and refugees. Why is it, Mr. Chomsky, whenever there are refugees in the world, they flee to the United States rather than from the United States? Why is it on balance, Mr. Chomsky, that this nation, when it opens its gates, has people rushing in? Why is it that it is this nation the world looks to for support and encouragement and help? We rebuilt Europe twice in this century after two world wars. We liberated Europe from Nazi tyranny. We have liberated Eastern Europe in the last few years from communist tyranny. And now we are engaged in a battle against something else. When we went into Kabul, even the New York Times in mid-November showed pictures of people smiling at the presence of American troops, because this country was once again a force for freedom and a force for liberation. Have we done some terrible things in our history? Of course we have. But as Senator Moynihan has pointed out, our people find out about them from reading the newspapers and watching television. When you look at this nation on balance in terms of what good it has done and what bad it has done, it is grossly irresponsible to talk about this country as a terrorist nation and to suggest, as you do in your book, that there is justification, moral justification, for what happened on 9/11. For that, sir, you really should be ashamed.
You should be ashamed for lying about what is in the book, because nothing is said. In fact, the quote was just given. Nothing can justify the terrorist attacks of September 11th. You just heard the quote. If you want to falsify it, that's your business.
Well,
Professor, let me jump in here. But implicit in that, aren't you saying that you understand why America was targeted?
Do I understand? Yes, so does the U.S. intelligence services. So does all of scholarship. I mean, we can ignore it if we like, and therefore lead to a further terrorist attacks, or we can try to understand. What Mr. Bennett said is about half true. The United States has done some very good things in the world, and that does not change the fact that the World Court was quite correct in condemning the United States as an international terrorist state, nor do the atrocities in Turkey in the last few years, they are not obviated by the fact that there are other good things that happened. Sure, that's fine. You're correct when you say good things have happened, but if we're not total hypocrites in the sense of the Gospels, we will pay attention to our own crimes. For one reason, that's elementary morality.
Right.
Elementary morality. For another thing, because we mitigate them.
All right, Professor, I'm going to have to leave it there with you, Bill Bennett. You get the last word, we've got to leave it to about 20 seconds.
Is there any nation that acknowledges its errors and its sins and its crimes and the things it has done that are not consistent with its principles more than the United States? No, there is not. This is also the man, just let it be said for the record, who said that the reports of atrocities by the Khmer Rouge were grossly exaggerated. This is the man who said when we engaged the Soviet Union that we were, I didn't interrupt you, that we were continuing the Nazi effort against Russia. Go through the Chomsky work, line by line, argument by argument, and you will see this is a man who has made a career out of hating America and out of trashing the record of this country. Of course, there's a mixed record in this country. Yeah. Why do you choose to live in this terrorist nation, Mr. Chomsky?
I don't. I choose to live in what I think is the greatest country in the world, which is committing horrendous terrorist acts and should stop.
I think
if you
want to
be a hypocrite,
I think
you want to be a hypocrite
a little more often.
If you want to be a hypocrite,
acknowledge its virtues a little more often, Mr. Chomsky.
And you should acknowledge its crime.
I do. Read my book.
No, you never
will see it.
No, sorry. And if you want to know what I say,
reading other people's
books. If you want to know what I say, do not listen to Mr. Bennett's falsifications, of which I just gave an example.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to cut off both of you there. Noam Chomsky, Bill Bennett, thank you for both of your thoughts. And I think probably the best course of action anybody can take out there is buy both of your books so they can make their own judgment. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time.
The First Amendment guarantees our right to free speech, but sometimes speaking freely can provoke a much stronger reaction than you ever intended. And that's what's happening to University Professor Ward Churchill, whose comments about 9/11 are being denounced as evil and inflammatory. That may cost him his job. I'll be speaking with him in a couple of minutes. But first, let's look at some of what he's written. You'll understand immediately why it's so controversial. September 11th, while the nation was coming to grips with the horrific images in New York, Shanksville, and at the Pentagon, one American was putting his thoughts to paper, calling victims of the terrorist attacks little Eichmanns in a direct comparison to Hitler henchman and Holocaust engineer Adolf Eichmann. His name? Ward Churchill, a Native American activist, Vietnam veteran, and tenured professor with the University of Colorado's Ethnic Studies program. Churchill's September 11th essay went on to describe Pentagon victims as, quote, military targets, pure and simple, and characterized some of the World Trade Center victims not as innocent, but as, quote, braying self-importantly into their cell phones, arranging power lunches and stock transactions. That essay was later expanded into a book, which went largely unnoticed, until last month, when the Colorado professor was invited to speak at Hamilton College in upstate New York. The national media soon picked up on it, and by Monday, Churchill bowed to pressure, stepping down as chairman of the Ethnic Study Program. In the interest of free speech, Hamilton College officials initially vowed to honor their invitation to Churchill, despite pressure from New York Governor George Pataki.
Let him speak. Let him say his hatred, spew his hatred. Let him put out his support for terrorism, but not at a respected forum here in New York.
And by Tuesday, Hamilton College officials canceled the event. Back on the Colorado campus, protests against Churchill.
Everyone around here is welcome to come sign our petitions to have this madman fired.
He's still being a cheerleader for terrorism. He's still saying that they should attack us again. Nothing has changed.
Have been matched by counter-protests.
Professors should be allowed to express their feelings and their thoughts and ideas.
And the fact that he remains an active professor doesn't sit well with Colorado Governor Bill Owens.
When you say, in essence, they had it coming and they deserved it, that's beyond what we should be paying for through our tuition and through our taxes to the University of Colorado. If he had any sense of moral authority, he would resign.
Earlier this week, Colorado state legislators approved a resolution condemning Professor Churchill, calling his remarks evil and inflammatory.
And we do not accept the pronouncements of Professor Churchill. Rather, we denounce them as being disgusting, vulgar, repugnant.
But throughout the firestorm, many of his colleagues have defended his right to free speech.
We as faculty in the Department of Ethnic Studies at the University of Colorado Boulder stand in full and unconditional support of our colleague Ward Churchill's freedom of expression and First Amendment rights.
Churchill himself says he's received more than 100 death threats and claims that his truck was vandalized. His daily life now is in the media spotlight.
I am going to think about my class. Get out of my face.
Yesterday, an emergency meeting of University of Colorado regents erupted into chaos. The regents will spend the next 30 days reviewing Churchill's speeches and writings before making any decisions about his fate. In the meantime, the regents apologize to the nation for the writings of their professor.
Given a chance to speak freely about Wade Churchill's opinions, many New Yorkers would start with a Bronx cheer, and that's a loud one, but they won't get the chance to do it in person. His speaking engagement, as we mentioned, at a college in upstate New York, was canceled this week, sparking a whole new debate about freedom of speech. Here's Maria Hinojosa.
Even at picturesque Hamilton College, 5 hours north of New York City, the events of September 11th were never far away from Matthew Capo. His father died in the Twin Towers.
It's a little remembrance thing that it's been 3 years, but it doesn't seem like 3 years.
So he was angry when he read in the campus newspaper that Ward Churchill had been invited to speak at his college. The Colorado professor, who once wrote that the people who died September 11th, like his father, were not innocent victims.
For him to stand up and preach that all the September 11th victims deserved it and then to reference him to Nazis, I don't understand why the school would want to give him that.
Capo wanted him disinvited, and a debate broke out on campus over Churchill's right to free speech. The national media was not far behind, and soon there were death threats against the school president and the controversial speaker.
At this point, the question of security outweighed the right of any particular individual to speak, and I had reluctantly to cancel the event.
Churchill's speech was canceled. But the night he was supposed to speak, students continued the debate around campus in forums closed to the media and the public, who students felt had hijacked their debate. They signed a free speech banner and donned T-shirts saying, "The mark of an educated mind is that it can entertain an idea without accepting it." Thomas Acampora also lost friends and co-workers on September 11th. He says he's disgusted by Churchill's writings, but wanted an opportunity to challenge him.
It is at the very heart of this academic community that we engage views that we don't find that hurt us, that upset us, that make us angry.
Nancy Rabinowitz was one of the professors who invited Churchill to the campus.
The irony is that this was a conversation that was to be held about the limits of dissent, and now we see the limits enforced by the terrorist threat of violence.
The debate also continued on the pages of the campus newspaper, which questioned whether a college should let violence silence speech.
People can threaten violence now, and they can have an impact on what will be said on a college campus.
Even Matthew Capo is unhappy with the outcome.
It's the worst possible ending to this whole thing. I mean, if he had come, it almost would have been better, just for he would have his free speech, and we would probably had a silent vigil just honoring everyone who died, and no violence whatsoever. No one wanted any violence, and for it to end this way was pretty terrible.
Once again, that was Maria Hinojosa giving us a sense of how college folks are reacting to this. Coming up next, you're going to meet the man at the center of this growing firestorm. Ward Churchill joined us from Denver in an exclusive interview in just a moment. As we've seen, Professor Ward Churchill has stirred up a firestorm of controversy. He joins me now from Boulder, Colorado. Professor, I wanted to start off by reading a part of your essay. You say that it has been distorted since you wrote it, and I want to read specifically what you wrote about September 11, 2001. Quote, "The Pentagon building and those inside compromised military targets, pure and simple. As those in the World Trade Center, they were civilians of a sort, but innocent? Give me a break. They formed a technocratic core at the very heart of America's global financial empire, to which the military dimension of U.S. policy has always been enslaved, and they did so both willingly and knowingly." Then you go on to say, "If there was a better, more effective, or in fact any other way of visiting some penalty befitting the participation upon the little Eichmanns inhabiting the sterile sanctuary of the Twin Towers, I'd be interested in hearing about it." Those are direct quotes from your essay. You have described it as stream of consciousness writing right after the attacks. Are there any words you would change in that today?
Actually not. I would probably add a few words to explain the meaning of the little Eichmann's phrase, but in terms of changing it, I wouldn't. The reference was to the thesis on banality of evil that was produced by Hannah Arendt a long time ago.
Let's come back to your little Eichmann comment for a moment. We're going to put that back up on the screen so you can help us understand what you really meant. In essence, you're calling the 9/11 victims little Eichmann, referring to Adolf Eichmann, of course, who organized the deportation of Jews into the concentration camps. Can you understand why 9/11 families are outraged by this, as well as anybody who has any experience with the Holocaust?
Actually, I think you're wrong in some part on both counts. But yes, in general, I can understand the sense of outrage, and that's what I was attempting to engender. I wanted to engender a response comparable to that experienced and manifested by peoples elsewhere when they are treated in a similar fashion as a matter of course in the U.S.
How can you Professor, how can you possibly equate the activities going on in the World Trade Center, people waiting on tables at the windows on the World Restaurant, police officers on duty that day, stockbrokers, with the actions of Adolf Eichmann?
You are, I believe, mixing apples and oranges there. I don't believe
I'm just reading what you wrote.
Any reasonable definition by which you can consider a food service worker or a janitor or even a fireman or a random passerby as being a member of a technocratic corps. How do you define pushing a broom as being a technical operation? It was rather clearly stated who I was talking about.
How do you say that, sir? I'm going to put that back up one more time on the screen.
Okay.
And I'm curious how you think someone reading this would see any differentiation between anybody working in the building that day. I mean, basically you said befitting their participation upon the little Eichmanns inhabiting the sterile sanctuary of the Twin Towers.
And immediately before that, I had made reference to a technocratic corps. Is there a definition that I'm unaware of by which a janitor becomes a technician or a food service worker becomes a technician of empire? It's reasonably restrictive articulation. Could perhaps be clearer.
What could you say tonight that would make that clearer? What would you want people to understand?
The people who perform the technical functions that results in the impoverishment, immiseration, and ultimately the deaths of millions in order to maximize profit. And I don't believe that there is any reasonable definition by which food service workers, firemen, janitors, children, random passerby fit that definition. And it's clearly articulated. You just read it. But I would have gone further to explain the Eichmann reference to be in the terms framed by Hannah Arendt, that Eichmann was essentially a bureaucrat, a technician. He killed no one, but he performed technical functions with a great degree of proficiency and full knowledge that the outcome of his endeavor would be essentially mass murder.
Let me come back.
I don't believe it's any great mystery that there is cost and consequence to the way the U.S. does businesses work as usual in its projection of economic dominance upon the planet. I think that's a reasonably clear proposition.
Let me come back to the victims of 9/11 one more time, because I've had the opportunity to speak with many outraged family members. They have read this essay over and over again, and here is what really upset them. You went on in the essay to say that 9/11 terrorists were not cowards, they were not fanatics, and that their actions were not insane, but actually, in your words, a normal response. I don't know how anybody could view a terrorist act as a normal response.
I think I also used the term gallant in that connection, and it was done as a part of a strategy to evoke the response that's been evoked. I was using the same sort of nomenclature and definition that would, for example, designate someone who's sitting at a computer console on a missile frigate 1,500 miles away from a target, pushing a button to send death and destruction down upon whoever happens to be in the target zone, be they civilian, be they non-civilian, whatever, and then designate them a hero.
Well, you have certainly succeeded
it's
in evoking a response, sir.
Yeah.
And how can you not say that your writings constitute being pro-terrorist? You've heard the governor of New York accuse you of that, the governor of Colorado, and even some of the folks you just heard in the pieces we aired.
I think terrorism is a phenomenon to be quelled, but if you're going to deal with any phenomena, you first must define and, more importantly, understand it. And what I'm saying, this is a perfectly comprehensible response to the way the U.S. projects itself in the world. It's as simple as that.
All right.
When you are not only causing the occurrence of... When you're causing children to die in mass numbers somewhere else and you refer that as being something worth the price, or when you designate the civilian casualties in another country as being so much collateral damage, you've utterly devalued and dehumanized those people, in addition to killing them.
But, sir, you're not saying that there is a parallel universe between terrorists purposely striking innocent civilians and governments. Are you accusing the U.S. government of purposely killing innocent Iraqi women and children? Is that what you're saying here?
I do know that the Pentagon sits and does computations on the extent of collateral damage to be anticipated. Now, that collateral damage is actually human beings, civilians, non-combatants, and yes, they are factoring it in.
Factoring in, but does that mean they want to kill them, that they want to do that on purpose? Or that happens as a result of military targets?
I don't know that the people at 911 specifically wanted to kill everybody that was killed. It was just worth it to them in order to do what it was they decided it was necessary to do, that bystanders be killed. And that's essentially the same mentality, the same rubric. And yes, I do believe that that is official state terrorism when you do computations of collateral damage. I also believe it's a war crime. And I believe the United States is quite conscious that it's a war crime, and it doesn't care because there's no one to impose the rule of law upon it.
All right,
it
so you're telling me tonight,
fashion.
In spite of everything you've written, you're against terrorism.
I am against terrorism.
So
I'm
if you're against,
the sort
against
of
terrorism,
thing that happened
I'm in sorry, I still don't understand. You're saying on one hand, the terrorism directed against the United States was justified. So why isn't that being pro-terrorist? They had it coming, basically, what you said.
I didn't say justified. I didn't actually say that either. You can adduce from the Eichmann metaphor or analogy what you might believe to be the fate they had coming, but I didn't actually say that. What
yeah, but
I
it sounds
say,
to me, you've just said that you wanted us to, you wanted to provoke us. That's what you wanted us to induce, isn't it?
I wanted you to be provoked, you in a generic sense, to understand the nature of the response elsewhere when people are treated that way. This is not my voice. This is the voice of logic attending the event. I was hearing the morning of 911. And remember, this piece was originally written on 911 at the request of a new journalist. It said we need a gut response to this very rapidly. And CNN, no less than any other network, before the buildings came down, was already describing this as being senseless. And I'm saying to myself, how can they know that? Senseless means with no purpose. How do we know they had no purpose? We can agree with it, we can disagree with it, but that's an absolute misrepresentation of the reality. What is the purpose and why?
All right, I want to come back.
Being posed too.
I want to come back to the whole issue surrounding 9/11 families. Tonight you said you wouldn't take
back
anything
you were
written. Well, let me just say this. Tonight I think you're more clearly laying out what you, in your judgment, constitutes victims on 9/11. Do you think you owe an apology to the families who read the same essay I read, who thought that you were referring to their loved ones, the waiters in restaurants, the janitors in the building, as somehow being responsible for fueling the military-industrial complex?
I don't believe I owe an apology because I don't believe I included their families, the people you're talking about, in. I think some other people have very conscientiously attempted to put those words in my mouth, and I think it may be that quite a number of people who have been imputing things to me that I didn't actually say could well and truly owe an apology. There are media sources that have me calling for the deaths of millions of Americans. Nowhere in there do I do that. My object is to figure out if we're going to solve this problem, how to go about it. And first thing is to understand the nature of the response. And my thesis basically was that any people subjected to the kind of degradation, devaluation, and dehumanization of, say, the Iraqis, or, say, the Palestinians, will either respond in kind or people will respond in their name in kind. And it doesn't matter whether they're Arabs or they're Americans. And that actually, in the last 10 days, has been, well, actually, more like 5 days.
Right.
Has been borne out pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
There's terrorism being undertaken in the name of the 9/11 families,
We have time just for
one
brief last question, Professor. Do you think you're going to end up being fired?
Actually, I don't.
You have said that if the University of Colorado does fire you, quote, they don't want to do that unless they want me owning this university. Does that constitute a threat?
I've heard that. I don't remember the statement, actually.
That has been widely quoted in a number of different sources. Would you change what you said if that's what's been printed?
If that was what I said, it would be a wildly hyperbolic statement. I don't recall saying it. I have heard it said that I said it beginning on Bill O'Reilly last night, and this is the way this whole process has been working. One media figure says something and attributes to me, and then it's attributed by a number of other media figures to me.
All right, so what is the truth tonight?
I would contest the firing.
You will contest the firing,
sure,
and would you sue the university?
I would contest the firing, certainly. Of course I would sue the university for a breach of its own rules.
So you're saying tonight that you never threatened the university?
I'm threatening no one. There is a threat that something may be done to me, and I would respond if it were in fact done, but I don't know for a fact that there is anything of the sort going to be done. Do you?
I have no idea. I'm just observing from here.
Well, we're in the same boat there. They're not talking to me either.
Professor Ward Churchill, there certainly are a number of discussions going on with the regents in your state. We will be following it closely from here. Ward Churchill, thanks so much for your time tonight. Coming up next, we turn to an entirely different subject, a soldier bound to duty. He's had many close calls. He's made many sacrifices on the battlefield and at home. You'll meet him coming up next. The Chancellor is ordering a review of Professor Ward Churchill's controversial remarks he made in an essay about 9/11 in which he asserted that the attacks were what he called a natural and unavoidable consequence of unlawful U.S. policy. Among other things, he called many of those killed in New York's World Trade Center little Eichmanns, a reference to Adolf Eichmann, who masterminded the Nazi plan to exterminate Jews during World War II. Tonight, Paula Zahn spoke with Professor Churchill about how these statements upset the relatives of those who died on 9/11 and asked him if he intends to retract his statement or even apologize.
I don't believe I owe an apology because I don't believe I included their families, the people you're talking about, in. I think some other people have very conscientiously attempted to put those words in my mouth, and I think it may be that quite a number of people who have been imputing things to me that I didn't actually say could well and truly owe an apology. There are media sources that have me calling for the deaths of millions of Americans. Nowhere in there do I do that. My object is to figure out if we're going to solve this problem, how to go about it. And first thing is to understand the nature of the response. And my thesis basically was that any people subjected to the kind of degradation, devaluation, and dehumanization of, say, the Iraqis or, say, the Palestinians, will either respond in kind or people will respond in their name in kind. And it doesn't matter whether they're Arabs or they're Americans. And that actually, in the last 10 days, has been, well, actually, more like 5 days.
Right.
Has been borne out pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
There's terrorism being undertaken in the name of the 9/11 families.
We have time just for
one
brief last question, Professor. Do you think you're going to end up being fired?
Actually, I don't.
Well, Colorado Governor Bill Owens is calling for Churchill to be fired. It is hardly surprising that Ward Churchill's comments have angered so many New Yorkers, whether native-born or transplant. All New Yorkers become part of the community of the city, especially in the days since 9/11.